All right, Alexander, let's talk about Turkish President Erdogan's trip to the north of Cyprus, to the Varosha region, where before his arrival, he was boasting about some very big revelations, big statements that he was going to make. In my opinion, he really didn't make any groundbreaking news. He pretty much reiterated his belief that his stance, actually, it's now become that there should be a two separate state solution in Cyprus. Just to give some background, he arrived in the occupied north on July 20th, which was the anniversary of the Turkish invasion of the island, which has left the island divided for 40, 45, 46 years and going. And no end in sight to the division. We've hit a stalemate. The relations between Greece and Turkey are awful. The relations between Cyprus and Turkey are awful. And Erdogan is now moving to build up this occupied town of Varosha, which should not be touched until there is some sort of resolution. But now he's beginning to revitalize this area. He did make a statement that he'll return 3.5% of this Varosha town back to the rightful owners, which is currently under Turkish military rule. So anyway, Alexander, that's just a very, very brief summarization. You may want to go into some more detail. But he really built it up that he was going to come to the island and make some super huge statements. Azerbaijan was going to recognize the occupied north, that he was going to, that he found oil and gas extracts in the north. I mean, he was building it up. At the end of the day, he really didn't announce anything whatsoever except for the usual bluster that you have to have a two separate state solution instead of a bi-communal, bi-federal resolution to the Cyprus problem, which is what the UN has been mandating since the Turkish invasion of the island. Alexander, what about
I think that's exactly right. Now, let's talk about Varosha, because what he's now doing, essentially, is he's trying to create a situation where this territory in northern Cyprus will, at least as he hopes, become self-sustaining and self-dependent. And to be absolutely clear about this, he talks about a two-state solution in Cyprus, but it's difficult to imagine two Turkish states. I personally see the two-state solution that he's talking about as a first step towards ultimate Turkish annexation. In other words, you get the international community to recognise northern Cyprus as an independent state. Northern Cyprus ultimately decides to join Turkey, which it would be its right to do if it was independent. Turkey then formally annexes northern Cyprus, and at the same time, places like Varosha become an enormously attractive economic asset for Turkey. And in the meantime, until that happens, northern Cyprus. I think that is very much his plan. And I think very much what he was expecting to do was that he was going to go to Cyprus, northern Cyprus, and he was going to announce that he has international support to have northern Cyprus recognised as an independent state. And I'm pretty sure Azerbaijan had been enlisted to do that because, of course, Turkey had gave a lot of support to Azerbaijan in the war with Armenia, which we covered extensively last year. And what happened instead was that the president of Azerbaijan, Ilham Aliyev, went to Moscow and he had meetings with Putin, and this recognition from Azerbaijan didn't come. And the result was not just Azerbaijan, but none of the other Central Asian states, the Turkish-speaking Central Asian states, none of them bundled in and recognised northern Cyprus either as an independent state. The United States also shot down the idea of it recognising northern Cyprus as an independent state, and Erdogan found himself in northern Cyprus without the big theme, the big thing that he wanted to say. It didn't happen. And that's why it turned out into an anticlimax. But having said that, I still have to say this. One can't assume that Erdogan has given up. On the contrary, always one gets the impression that his strategy in these kind of things is to retreat when he has to retreat and then return when he can return. So I think this is very much his agenda now. And the developments around Varosha have not been stopped. They are going to proceed. And when he talks about returning 3.5% of the property there to its rightful owners, that's, of course, not just token. I think a lot of people in Cyprus, and you speak from Cyprus, but I think a lot of them would find that as insulting, as an attempt essentially to confiscate Varosha, all the property in Varosha, and basically say to people, look, I'm just giving you crumbs. That's all I'm prepared to do, giving you crumbs off my table. I'm doing that as the generosity of somebody who's in an immensely strong position, but I have no intention of sharing Varosha with you in any form at all. So I think that's what that's all about. So I think this is a big play by Erdogan. It didn't quite come off, certainly not the way that he expected that it would come off. And I think that by no means is this, however, the end of the story.
Yeah, it is a big play. It is token. It is insulting. But for Erdogan, even though he didn't get the support from the international community that he wanted, I do believe that he drags this on even further. I mean, he states that he wants a solution. That's what he says publicly, but it has to be two different countries, and that's his position. At the end of the day, his goal is to keep the stalemate moving, and eventually, if he can't get support for the annexation, then maybe his belief is that over time, it'll just be de facto absorbed into Turkey. Because on the flip side, on the Cyprus side, of the Greek side, the activity to find a deal or to somehow hold Erdogan accountable is zero to none. I mean, yeah, you also get token movements from the Cyprus and the Greek side. And those token movements are, well, we filed a complaint with the UN, and we filed a complaint with the European Union. And then they're going to go to Brussels and they're all going to vote, including Greece and Cyprus, to give Erdogan another 20 billion. So he doesn't flood the European Union with more migrants. But anyway, those token statements from Erdogan to keep the stalemate moving, because he sees that the other side is also just token statements. It's great for Ursula von der Leyen to say, we're never going to accept this, but he knows. You know, Ursula, just sit back down on the sofa and just keep quiet. I mean, he knows this.
I think your summary of the situation is exactly correct. I think that's exactly right. What Erdogan is doing is he's creating what are called facts on the ground. So the situation is in stalemate, that he now has a clear objective, which, as I said, is independence for northern Cyprus as a kind of independent state, which is really a Turkish protectorate, preparatory, as I said, to eventual annexation. And he is creating facts on the ground. He is building up Varosha. By the way, that only makes sense, if you think about it, if Varosha is going to be able to attract foreign tourists. So he's building facts on the ground. And if he doesn't get what he wants now, he will wait 2 years, 1 year, and he'll come back and say, look, we have now a viable state there. The economy is moving forward. It's becoming increasingly clear that this attempt to reintegrate northern Cyprus with southern Cyprus, to unite the country, in other words, is no longer effective, because this state in northern Cyprus has now developed an independent identity. And eventually, what he hopes is that international opinion will swing behind him. Now, it doesn't have to be everybody. That's the important thing to understand. You can just get a couple of countries, some of the stans, you know, the Central Asian states, which are Turkey, Azerbaijan, Central Asian states, perhaps some other Muslim states. If you can get them to agree to recognise northern Cyprus as an independent state, if you can get Kosovo to do it and Albania to do it, with which he's had at times good relations, if you can get the government in Bosnia to do it, then he is beginning to move the dial in diplomatic terms. And the more states gradually come round to accepting what he's up to, the more likely it is to happen. And that is his plan. And your identification of the weakness of Greek and Cypriot diplomacy in the face of this is spot on. The Greeks and the Cypriots do absolutely nothing except rush off and talk to their masters, we have to call them that, in Brussels and Washington, and complain to them about what this bad man Erdogan is doing. And the Americans and the Europeans issue statements which Erdogan ignores, because they are just words and they have no meaning. Now, if Greece, for example, were to take an entirely different position and it were to say at the European Council that Greece will veto sanctions on Russia over Ukraine unless similar steps were taken with respect to the situation in Cyprus, now that might attract attention. That would change the situation entirely. The dynamic then would become very concerning, and you'd see the Europeans and the Americans have a fit at that point, and they might listen finally to what the Greeks have to say, because you always require unanimity on the European Council. But they will never do that, because they want to be always in good stead with their masters in Brussels and in Washington. So the result is that they go and complain and absolutely nothing is achieved.
Yeah, I want to get to what Greece and Cyprus can do, and I want to talk about the stasis, a word that you use often between Greece and Cyprus, stasis, weakness. But first I want to ask you a real quick legal question, a human rights legal question, property question. If Turkey starts developing Barossa and hotels begin to open, what does that mean for people who have a right to that property, the legal owners of that property? And these businesses start to operate. They start getting tourists, even from Turkey. Even tourists in Turkey start coming in there. People start opening businesses, restaurants, and things start moving on this in this occupied town. And what are the legal implications if there are rightful owners to Varosha who do take him up on his 3% offer? Say there are people that say, oh, he's going to give 3% back. You know what? I want in. I want my home back. I want my property back. Or I want to sell my home and my property to the to this unrecognized occupied Turkish presence, this Turkish government. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, can I just say, if Varosha were to go into operation with all this confiscated property, there would be court cases possible. I mean, this is what one avenue might be, through the European Court of Human Rights, for example, because this would be a legal expropriation of property, and Turkey remains within the Convention of Human Rights. For how long it will, that's another question, but for the moment, it's still there. And you could probably build, in fact, I'm sure you could bring claims in all sorts of courts, and Greece and Cyprus could also bring court claims against Turkey in the International Court of Justice in The Hague. So they would have various legal rights. The problem with bringing those kind of claims is that they're not easy to enforce, even if you get judgments in your favour, but they might be difficult and embarrassing for Turkey if they go wrong. And they might open up the way for Greek Cypriot owners to bring private claims in national courts against Turkish assets around the world, based on whatever decisions had been made on those in these international courts. That's possible. But, of course, the more people take up Erdogan's offer, the more difficult it becomes to get those decisions, those judgments in the international courts, because they will then say, well, so enough people have consented to what Erdogan has done that ultimately this is now de facto acceptance and we're not going to interfere with it. So that's probably part of the strategy that Erdogan is following. It has a legal dimension as well as a political one.
So anyone that takes him up on the offer is de facto accepting the facts on the ground. Like you said, they're accepting that there is a functioning legal state entity in the
North. Absolutely. And by doing so, they weaken the position the legal position of all those other people who refuse to take up this offer. So it's important to say that, because of course there might be some people who are tempted, but if they're tempted to do that, then they're putting their own interests ahead of everybody else's. And that's perhaps something that some people always should consider, but in practice, as we know, when it's a question of money, people tend to follow their own private interests. We'll see how many people do take up this offer, if any do.
Okay, so let's finish this off with what Greece and Cyprus should be doing. We've suggested over various videos that Greece and Cyprus should begin to think out of the box as far as diplomacy, foreign policy, and dealing with Erdogan is concerned. But they never do. And we've seen the same situation again happen where Erdogan has made these moves. And Greece and Cyprus have just pretty much done the same thing that they've been doing for the past God knows how many decades. I mean, literally, it's like they probably have these letters, these complaint letters, just ready for the EU and the UN. They just probably just signed it and then sent it out. But it is getting to the point of sad, pathetic, and weak to see Greece and Turkey act like this. You mentioned Greece perhaps vetoing various sanctions against Russia. Is there an angle for Greece or Cyprus to begin to look to other countries? The UK has, to my disappointment, has been a big supporter of Turkey and not of the Cypriot cause. They've actually supported the Turkish cause more than the Cypriot cause. So there's obviously something amiss there. Something's not right there. And my final question to you is, and not many people talk about this, but I'll throw it out at you. Maybe the political class and the elite also want to keep this stasis, the Greek and the Cypriot, because I am sure there's a lot of business people and there's a lot of politicians and in general, just a lot of people on the upper levels of society that prefer to not rock the boat and have made a lot of money in the division, in just having things the way they are. Why unite the island? Why risk my business ventures, which are going so well, with perhaps more competition, more population, a larger Turkey, maybe Turkish companies? I don't know. I'm spitballing here. But this could also be playing a factor in at least the Cypriot side's lack of desire to actually think outside of the box and solve this. Because my hunch is, Alexander, if Greece and Cyprus really wanted to solve this, this is the truth. They could solve this.
Absolutely they could. And to answer your last point, I am sure there are a lot of people in Cyprus and, by the way, in Greece who find this situation with the division of the island perfectly attractive, exactly for the reasons that you say. They've made many investments in the last 30, 40 years in other parts of Cyprus, in other parts of Greece. Absolutely, they do not want big resorts, big businesses in northern Cyprus coming back into a united Cyprus and competing head to head with their own. Absolutely. Also, they may be concerned about how do you assimilate this population in northern Cyprus, which has been, by the way, boosted in numbers as a result of Turkish emigration since the division, the occupation of the island in 1974. So absolutely, one could see all of these factors in play. And of course, and this is an important thing to always stress, there is always, in Greece and in Cyprus, a very great unwillingness on the part, not just of the political elite, but of the economic and financial elite, or at least large parts of it, a unwillingness to rock the boat with the Europeans and with the Americans and with everybody else, because that disturbs life going on as normal. They want to keep things in stasis because they are nervous of change and of the forces that change mightily unleash, both within Cyprus and within Greece. It might, for example, give Greece and Cyprus a degree of self-confidence if they were able to achieve a success in this conflict, which might lead more people in Greece feeling more confident to insist that Greece take a more strong position on economic matters with the EU, on the situation in the Balkans, on all sorts of other things, which an awful lot of people in Greece, particularly those in power, don't want to see. The situation that we now have suits them very well. But, you know, that's a thing always to understand
very
about this
point.
This point. Yeah.
In other words, now, Hellenic, I'm sorry to cut you off, like a Hellenic patriotism, a pan-Hellenic patriotism.
Yeah.
It spooked them.
Sorry, absolutely.
It's just a really good point. I've never heard that point before.
No question at all. It's again, something that makes us a lot of people nervous. Now, can I just say, I mean, I'm not talking about something I don't know about. I mean, I come from, as you come from, we come from political families in our in Greece and in Cyprus. And what I speak about, I know for a fact there are people who think in that way, and they are important and prominent position people, and they're in important and powerful positions. So pan-Hellenic patriotism does indeed worry them. It makes them very nervous. A lot of them, that's absolutely not what they want to see. And if we come back to what Greece could do in this situation, it could do an awful lot. It could, as I said before, I've said many times, it could pursue a more balanced foreign policy. It could speak to Russia, which has historically been a friend of Greece. The Russian culture minister toured Greece recently, for example. They could speak to the Russians about this. The Russians have always supported Greece and Cyprus over the Cyprus issue. They could get the Russians to put more pressure on Turkey. They could speak to China too, where Greece has also had friends. And of course, the Chinese now have ever growing leverage over Turkey. After all, the Chinese foreign minister, as I recently discussed in a program in my channel, went to Syria, gave support to the Syrian government, and made all kinds of warnings to Turkey. Now, if China's prepared to do that for Syria, conceivably, it could do that for Greece and Cyprus also. I mean, in some ways, Greece and Cyprus are more useful to China than, say, Syria is. And, of course, and not least, Greece could play tough in the European Council, in the institutions of the European Union. They could point out, for example, what is absolutely true, that the European Union gets on its high horse about the loss by Ukraine of Crimea, of the presence of, of the secession or attempted secession of the two Donbass republics, of the attempted secession of the two republics from Georgia, Abkhazia and South Ossetia. It insists on imposing sanctions on Russia over these issues. And they can point out, the Greeks and the Cypriots could point out, perfectly validly, that the Russians have done, or alleged to have done, exactly what the Turks did in 1974 and received no penalty for. And the Greeks and the Cypriots could say, well, if you are going to take that position with Russia over Ukraine, you should take the same position to be logical and consistent with Turkey over the situation in Cyprus. And if you're going to impose sanctions on Russia, you should impose sanctions on Turkey. And if you're not going to impose sanctions on Turkey, then we will veto the sanctions you want to impose on Russia. And at that point, of course, the Europeans would go berserk, and there'd be all kinds of threats, no doubt, to suspend Greece's voting rights on the EU Council. But that needs unanimity on the European Council to do. And Greece, if it has Cyprus on its side, would not face that, because Cyprus could veto any resolution to strip Greece of its voting rights. At that point, the entire European Union policy towards Russia and Ukraine collapses. And frankly, rather than take that step, rather than go down there, the Europeans would most certainly, I think, start to take a stronger line with situations in the Eastern Mediterranean. The Americans would be deeply alarmed also. That would be a strong foreign policy. But will any Greek government do it? I mean, how many of them have made the points I have just done? drawing comparisons between the situation in Cyprus and the situation as the US, as the Europeans and the US interpret it in Ukraine. It's an obvious point to make, and I've not heard a single minister of any Greek government, New Democracy, PASOK, Syriza, ever make it. And I've never heard any Cypriot government do so either. And they haven't, and they won't, and they never will. And in the meantime, as things continue, Turkey takes one piece, Turkey takes one piece of northern Cyprus after another, prepares, as I said, the day for its eventual annexation with independence, a kind of sham independence along the way. And we get ever closer to that point, and all we get are weak requests for action to the UN, the US, the EU, who issue token statements in response.
Yeah, we'll end it there, Alexander. I think you summed it up very, very well. To Greece and Cyprus, start doing something. That's pretty much your message. That's my message. Start doing. They know. They know everything you said. They know. They know they could do it, but they don't. That says it all.
Exactly.
All right. Okay, guys, we will leave it there. Durant Shop, guys, 10% off. Pick up a hat. This has the USA flag on it. 10% off when you use the code Real News. Alexander has a polo. I've also got a shirt. We got all kinds of Durant gear.
Amazing polo shirt. Incredible. It's sweatingly hot today here in England, and it's the best shirt you could possibly have for this kind of weather.
And check us out on Locals. We are growing a lot on Locals, guys, so check us out there. Take care.